Father, we pray that you'd really bless this time, not only here, but in all the workshops. We thank you that you will teach us things today that will help us understand the people to whom we try to minister. And so we're asking for your leadership, your guidance. Father, I know that I don't have anything to offer these men that would be that helpful to them. But I know that you can teach us and you can make us a profitable time. And that's what we ask you to do, that Jesus Christ might be glorified. For it's in his name that we pray. Amen. Let me see if we can close that a little bit more. If at any point you have difficulty hearing, if you'll raise your hand, I'll try to speak a little louder. Now, before you just read your outline, let me talk to you a minute. You know, in 1 Chronicles 12:32, it says the men of Issachar who had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do. And one of the things, if we're going to minister to people, the better we can understand them, understand where they came from, what they believe, why they think like they do, we'll have much better opportunity to know how to really minister to them. Now, you can look at your outline if you want to. Let me talk with you. I know you can read, but we're going to kind of go through this together. If at any point you have a question, you can feel free to ask. You know, that group of people born before 1926 were the original people we were calling the seniors. Now, in our culture right now, you don't have to be that old to be called a senior, but originally. And life was pretty simple for those people. There wasn't all that much technology. The technology that was developing was changing year by year, and people, every generation thought they were going to have it easier than the next generation, and that was basically true. And so as a result of that, there was a tremendous sense of always looking forward because things are going to get better. Now, if you ask that group of people how many of them were Christians, if you could have just gone to that group of people and said how many of them were Christians, at least two-thirds of them would say they were believers in the Lord Jesus Christ. Because you see, at that time in America, you started with Christianity. I mean, that was the starting place. Now, you might reject that, but at least that was the starting place. There was no other place to start because that was basically it in America. It was Christianity. And many different denominations, but at least that's where people started. You might reject it, but at least that was the starting place. Now, the next group that came along were those that were born from 1927 to 1945, and they're called the Builders. That happens to be the generation I'm in. They're also called the Silent Generation. You didn't hear a whole lot from those people. They didn't make a lot of waves. They just, you know, went to the wars and different things and worked hard, and you didn't hear a lot from them. And so they're called the Silent Generation. If you ask those people how many were Christians, and surveys have made, said about two-thirds of them would say that they're Christians. And then came along the generation after that that has really changed the world. And that's the ones that we read most about, more have been written about this generation than any generation in history. And they're called the Baby Boomers. Now, let me tell you a little bit about them. It's not on your paper. Because this is a very, very interesting generation. You know, after the Second World War, when the soldier boys came home, there was a tremendous sense of optimism in America. We had sacrificed in the war. We had won the war. We had these tremendous war factories, and so we turned those factories into making consumer goods. And we turned this nation into a consumer nation. I mean, it was unbelievable what happened as we began to make consumer goods. And though we had 9% of the world's populations, we had close to two-thirds of the products produced in the whole world because we really turned people into consumers. We had all these war factories, and so suddenly we turned them into making consumer goods. And this was the first generation in which kids really became central. Always before, you know, people had hand-me-downs and things like this. Well, people realized we could make consumers out of these kids, and we really did. For example, the hula hoop. A couple of guys in California come up with this little old deal. They can make it for 50 cents, and they can sell it for a dollar and a half, and I mean, first thing you know, they're selling 30,000 a day of those crazy things. And these kids, as they grow up, they had the best of everything. You know, the best of food, the best of medicine, the best of clothes. And you know that today. You can walk in any kid's room that's 2 years old, go in his bedroom, there are more toys in that kid's room today than I saw my whole life growing up. I mean, you know, from the time I was born until I was out of high school. And so we made consumers out of people, and that's continued. There's some real interesting things about them, too. Like, for example, coon skin was about 29 cents a pound. I mean, it wasn't worth a whole lot. Until Disney World came out with Davy Crockett. And when Davy Crockett hit TV, I mean, overnight, coonskin went out of sight. And Steven Spielberg said that he went to class one day and he did not have a coonskin cap. He was the only kid in his class in the third grade that didn't have a coonskin cap. So he said, I had to be Santa Ana, and they chased me all the way home. And he said, I would not go to school until my parents got me a coonskin cap. Well, I mean, it goes from 29 cents a pound to $1.79 almost overnight. And then come along about Christmas where you couldn't give coonskin caps away because these kids would move from one thing to the other. And so they really became consumers. We had no idea in America what was happening. When the soldier boys came back from the war, there's a sense of optimism. Now before, and as a result of that, you know, they were getting married, they were having kids, and everybody had kids. It wasn't a matter that they were having such large families. It was just a tremendous sense of optimism in America. People were doing well. The future looked bright. We had won the war, and so they had, I mean, everybody had kids. I mean, there wasn't any reason they didn't. As somebody said, in America, we didn't know how not to have kids. I mean, everybody had kids. Well, we didn't realize what was going to happen when those kids started growing up. We weren't prepared for that. When they started going to school, like, for example, Los Angeles put on 1,000 new school teachers, a new ones. Now, that's not just replacing the ones that quit, but they put on 1,000 new school teachers every year in Los Angeles and couldn't keep up. We had kids in school fronts and everything, and the universities, I mean, is somebody compared this to a pig and a python. You know, if this pig swallows this python, as that pig moves through, you can see that big lump in the society. And that's exactly what happened when the baby boomers were born. Now, just to show you how much we didn't realize what was happening, General Electric, when they, GE, when they had their anniversary, they decided that they would, and I've forgotten how many, 125,000 employees or something like that, and they decided that they would give 5 shares of stock to every baby born on the anniversary of GE, on their 75th anniversary. And so they were going to give 5 shares of stock to every baby born to one of their employees on that day. So they go to the people who study culture and all that sort of thing and say, how many shares of stock should we set aside? Well, the best they could figure out on that date to their employees, there'd be 13 babies born. And so they figured, you know, 13 babies times 5 shares of stock, and they set that aside. Well, on that particular day, they had 189 babies born. And that was just kind of a symptom of what was happening. As a result of that, too, that's when the suburbs really became big in America. People saw, we've got kids now, we don't want to leave them in, raise them in inner cities, so we start moving out to the suburbs, and that's when we began to need 2 cars in the family. It was amazing what began to happen as a result of this this baby boom that came about in America. Now, another thing that happened is very significant. Always before, the people that had the greatest influence on their children had been the parents. And they're the ones that primarily taught them. The kids learned from the parents. But when this herd of kids came along, we started dealing with them in groups. That's when Boy Scouts became a big deal, Little League, all these things began because we had so many kids. And for the first time, these kids began to look to their peers for leadership rather than their parents. Now, we know that parents still have should have a great influence on them, but if you wonder today, why is it that we see so many times a kid is so influenced by his peers, that began to happen. Because we had kids everywhere, and then another thing began to happen. As moms began to go to work, parents began to have less time with their kids, and they began to be more influenced by others. And this has continued. Now, you'll see, especially with the baby boomers, trends starting that are continuing to this day. And so that's one of the things that happened with the baby boomers. Now, it's interesting, if you'll notice here, there's 76 million of them, and only about a third of those say that they're Christians. You see what's beginning to happen. Now, after the baby boomers came what we call the busters. Yes?
76 million, so we're talking about 25% of the population.
Right. Somewhat, I think there's, what is the U.S. population now? About?
Yeah, it's a little bit more than, it's about 30%.
Yeah, it's close to 30, probably today. Somewhere in that, between 25 and 30. Now, after that came the baby busters. It's really interesting. This, the reason we call them busters is because the other one was so big, and then all of a sudden the birth rate went down. We call them busters. That's not a real good nomenclature. There were about 76, 77 million of the baby boomers, or about 72 million of these busters. So it's still a very, very large part of the culture. But if you ask the busters, if surveys that have been made among the busters, you ask them how many are Christian, and it's about 15%. And then you go to the bridgers, that's the new generation. They may be called by other things, but at least one, probably the book that I know of that's been written about them is called the Bridger Generation. And if you go today and ask kids born between 1977 and 1994 how many of them are Christians, across the nation, about 4%. And that ought to tell us something. I mean, we are fast losing this nation. Because you can see from every age group how the ratio of those that are becoming Christian. Now, I've seen some surveys where it's a little bit higher. But one of the things you'll notice with the Bridgers, when you talk about religion, and one thing they are finding out about them is that they are religious, but when they say they're religious, you don't have the foggiest idea what that means. It does not necessarily mean with Christianity, mean that they know Jesus Christ. Now, as I said before, the older group in our culture, the real option was either Christianity or nothing. I mean, you started with Christianity. Well, today in America, they're not necessarily starting with Christianity. They may be starting with Buddhism, they may be starting with Hinduism, they may be starting with nothing. And so it's not a matter of you either accept or reject Christianity, like was true at one time. They're not even, many of them are not even starting with Christianity. That's no longer the starting place in America. Okay? Any question or comment, and we'll just...
What was the percentage on
4%. It's on the front page there, right at the... Did you didn't get one? Okay. Let's pass this back, if you would. Anybody else did not get outlines? Okay.
Max, does the Bridgers also the X generation?
No. Generation X is the... Are the busters. Uh-huh. Now, there's a new... fact is, there's an article someone just showed me in a Dallas paper came out the other day, and some of them are calling the wires, and they're different titles that you may see for them. Because different people, when something comes out, it's not that the whole world agrees this is what we're going to call them. You know, the generation, the busters also are called the 20th generation, and maybe some other terms. Have y'all heard of the term?
Slackers.
Yeah. Now, let me tell you, one of the things that you'll find is businessmen, and we're going to look through some of the characteristics of all these different ones. But one of the terms you heard is slackers. They really resent that term, and it's not even really a good term, because quite a number of them are working, and some of them really do have some industriousness about them. It's just it doesn't show in the same way. For example, the workplace is changing in America, because there was a time in which, you know, if a person went to college, he went to work for Conoco Oil. The day he got out of school, he worked for them until he retired. He was faithful to them. They were faithful to him. I don't know a college student that's graduated in the last 10 years that's in the job he wants to be in 3 years from now. I mean, it is rare to find a student that goes to work for a company and that's where he's planning to stay. And one of the reasons we know, because of the downsizing and the takeovers and everything in America, there's not a sense of loyalty. And see, that's strange, because I was born in 1936. I'm 61. And I grew up with a sense of loyalty. Like, I can remember going to family reunions, and my dad drove a Chevrolet, my uncle drove a Ford. And they'd get talking at this family reunions, and my uncle would say, "My dad, you still driving that old bucket of bolts?" "Well, yeah." And dad wouldn't have a Ford for anything, because he was a Chevrolet man. And there was a sense of loyalty. Like, my dad was a carpenter. He built this man's house. Who owned the grocery store. So we bought our groceries there. I mean, if they had a sale at another grocery store, you wouldn't go there for anything. You go to that grocery store. Now, that's hard for many of you to understand. But I remember, for example, when in 1971, when the Miami Dolphins, you know, they went through that year, 17 games or whatever it was, undefeated. And then the next year, Kick and Larry Zonka or whoever it was, all these guys jump and go to the World Football League. I thought, you traitors. Because, see, there's a sense, if you were part of that team and you grew up in America, there was a sense of loyalty. And, you know, they were going after the money. Well, now, as you know, on the sports teams, it doesn't make any difference. It's whoever will pay you the most. There's not that sense of loyalty, and that affects everything. And especially some of us that are older, and this is one of the reasons I try to read and study all the time to learn about these kids, because if you don't, and you don't understand where they're coming from, you're going to have a hard time ministering to them, because you just think, you know, what's wrong with you, you dumb kid? But there's some reasons they're like they are. See, there's some things that have really affected them. And so it's interesting to see what happened with the, you know, with the baby boomers, a tremendous surge, and the fact, and we're going to read about this a little later, some of the things that, that's where a number of you would fit. You would be have been born between 1946 and 64. And the next generation doesn't have real high respect for you. I mean, just you just look at it. I'm talking about not in terms of who you are as far as your character. I'm just talking about your generation. They think you messed it up. You're the ones that gave us AIDS. You're the one that messed up the culture. In so many ways, you're the one that got us in tremendous debt. I'm just talking about that's the way they look at you. That you have messed up the world, and now they come along. And it doesn't look like things are moving forward and as bright as they once were. See, every generation before the baby busters, every single generation thought the next generation is going to be better than the other one. And then see, like the parents out in California, they bought the little house for $25,000 and now it's worth $250,000. And they think, I won't have the standard of living my parents had. And so some of them really have some real questions about that. Now, we're going to see, but I'll just tell you this right up front. When it comes to, when we get to looking at the Bridgers and the Busters, there's a greater interest in missions than I've ever seen in this country. And how can it be that some of the things that you see that are so negative about them, and yet the tremendous interest in missions? Well, one of the things, they grew up with in divorced homes. They don't have the roots and the security. They're not necessarily trying to climb the corporate ladder. They lived for a while with grandma. They lived a while with their mother. They lived a while, you know, for a while when their mother and dad were still living together. So they've been kicked around. They're much more flexible. So you talk to them about going to Africa, that's not near the threat to them that it is to some of you, because they've lived in different situations. So they're much more flexible. And many of them, They're not trying to build a career. They're just trying to get by. And so they don't care whether they have a career or not. I mean, you know, it's amazing how they just want to kind of make it. And they don't want the same things their parents wanted. So it really helps if you kind of understand where they're coming from. Okay? Now let's flip the page. And we'll start talking about the seniors and the builders. And a lot of this stuff, you know, I never had original thought. I glean it from others. And so, but here are some of the areas. And it would be true of either the seniors or the builders. Some of the concerns, areas of concerns, if you or your church or you as a person want to minister to some of these people, here are going to be some of the concerns they have. Some of them are going to be concerned about finances, doing financial planning. Like if your church wanted to do a financial planning workshop, some of those people have money. They don't know what to do with it. They don't know basically what's going to happen when they die. They don't know how to get it to their kids instead of getting it to the government. Another area of interest is housing, where maybe it might be that some of them in an area could kind of band together, live in an area, check on each other. Personal safety. You could have workshops, you know, just how to check your home to make it safe. That is a fear with crime, especially older people have a fear of that. However, this is an interesting statistic too. A baby bridger is 7 times more likely to be attacked or to be a victim of crime than is an older person. But older people are very concerned about that. Health and nutrition, 1/2 of the people in this nation over 65 have nutritional deficiencies when they live alone. So many times they don't eat right. That's supposed to be transportation instead of transpiration. I didn't catch that before we printed it. It's, you know, when they lose their driver's license, you know, a church that would be concerned about helping them go to supermarkets, malls, physicians, things like that. Preparation for death. A lot of them will... Denial is really a real problem. They think if you're going to talk about it, it's likely to happen. You know, so they don't want to talk about dying because if you talk about it, maybe it really happened. Well, it's going to happen anyway. And, you know, assisting them with wills, trust, burial preparation, counseling, many of those things that a church could do could be a real assistance. Help them with spiritual needs, just such as topics of death, salvation, forgiveness, eternity. This can be done in groups. It can be done in homes, people going into their homes. This thing of forgiveness. A lot of times you'll find with some of the older people that they don't have a good relationship with son or daughter or someplace. And some of them need to really face that before they go on out into eternity. The area of forgiveness, trying to get relationships started. Leisure time. Many of them have too much time alone. Watching TV. Boredom's a major problem. And I think we need to really work at trying to help our older people feel that they have a place of ministry. They can help with things like vacation Bible school, prayer. You know, there's some guys in our church. One of the men told me that every day they play golf, 5 days a week. Now, these were guys that were deacons and grew up in Baptist churches, and I happen to know that because I happen to be one. And this guy was just telling me, he said, now if it's raining in Norman, we'll call Edmund to just see if we can go up there and play golf. If it's raining up north, we'll call Ardmore and drive down south. And these guys, and I thought, isn't that sad? I wonder if they've ever, one time, it ever entered their mind, why don't we get together one day and just pray for 3 hours? Never one time entered their mind. And one of the things we need to do, we've got a lot of people in this nation that are retired. It could be a tremendous help. If we could help them to pray and give them pictures of missionaries and people to pray and a lot of things they could do around the church and in a ministry to help if we trained them to do that. You know, senior discounts on airline tickets are terrific for going to the mission field, you know. But instead of people just getting their RVs, and incidentally, the mentality that's brought this about in America, retirement, we got that basically from the world. We didn't get it from the New Testament. And as a result of the fact that there's not anything after death, then you better really enjoy your last few years. That's a pagan idea. It really is. But that's the way we face retirement in America. Instead of saying, hey, now I have an opportunity and I'm going to be gunning it till the day I die in service to the Lord. And we need to be helping people to understand that. And we've got a lot of people in our churches that could really do something if we helped them. Maybe some of those things would be helpful. Substance abuse is a real problem. A lot of times you don't notice that they're not coming to work every day. So if this old boy's on the bottle, he's sitting there by himself day after day. And a lot of times, unless you get into the home and things, you don't know what's going on. Elder abuse. Sometimes they're abused by their family. So if we're going to minister to them, this may give you some ideas. And here on reaching them, many of them have very weak support systems. That is, due to their family living away, caregivers are needed. Sometimes a church can set up a hotline and get it out to adults, to older people that live in the area where they can call and ask questions, problems. You can have brochures for them on different areas of ministry. You can have support groups, different things that can be done where they can come to the church or they can come someplace where they can get advice, where they can pray together. There are at different traditional activities like Thanksgiving and Christmas where you can have dinners for them, or you can find ways in which you can minister to them. You can help them with their Social Security, income tax, things like that. Sponsor trips. You can offer classes, counseling with them. You can be a clearinghouse for help. You can help them in grandparenting. And here's a book down here if you're interested in reading about these, especially these three groups, the Builders, the Boomers, and the Busters, called Three Generations. It would be a very, very good book for you to read. Okay, let's look at the Boomers. It's interesting. The fellow says that the Boomer generation has really used the church primarily in three ways. Four ways. Hatching, matching, patching, and dispatching. That is, hatching, baby dedications, matching, weddings, counseling, and funerals. Now, one thing you'll find with the Boomers, their interpersonal relationships are usually pretty weak. As you can tell, over 50% of them end in divorce. Right about that. Another thing, this group resists joining organizations. They relate to their church differently than their parents did. You know, the Builders, and we'll see this later, they were there, you've heard the old phrase, every time the door was open. It didn't make any difference what was being said, who was preaching or not preaching or whatever. It's just, if you support the church, you know, we're there because the doors are open. Well, the Boomer generation doesn't have that attitude as much. And incidentally, there's some things to be said for making commitments, because a lot of times the Boomer generation has not made much commitment to the church. It's hard to do anything without some kind of a faithfulness in their senses. Well, I may be just as committed to Jesus, but they don't show it in the same way. For example, if it's Sunday afternoon, and if it's a Builder or a senior, and the lady were to say, her husband say, "Hun, are we going to go to church tonight?" He'd probably say, "Well, yeah, I think we ought to go and support the pastor or support the church," and they'd go. But if you say that to a Boomer, "Are we going to go to church tonight?" And he might say, "Well, no," or she'd say, "Well, no, I think we need to get some time with the kids." And so though they may, in a sense, be as committed to Christ, they may say, "Hey, we need to stay home tonight and spend some time with the kids." So there's a difference in mentality. Now, when you get on down to the Busters, they're not coming to support anything, necessarily. You better have something that attracts them, because they don't have a sense of loyalty. And I tell you today, this is true with most college students. I can get up and tell our students, 2 years from tonight at 7 o'clock, here's what we're going to do. and you announce it tomorrow and the next day, announce it every night for 2 years. And if something comes up better at 5 o'clock, they're gone. There's not a sense of loyalty. And you'll find this with college students. It's not that you've won their loyalty, you're constantly winning their loyalty. And that's true with the young people. You've got, you know, used to, you won a guy's loyalty, you had his heart, and he's with you. When I'm talking about most of the people in our culture, there's some of them, of course, that are raised in maybe very strict Christian homes, and they wouldn't have been influenced as much by the culture. But even if a kid's raised in a Christian home, he's so influenced by his peers and his school and others that you'll find these kinds of attitudes in kids that grew up right in your home, and yet you took them to church every Sunday, maybe of their life. Okay? Now, so they resist joining in organizations. They're kind of skeptical of authority. You know, this is interesting. We're going to be taking a group of kids to Glen Eyrie in 2 or 3 weeks. You know, when we first started going up there, we'd have 15 messages. I mean, we'd go up there and 15 or 20 messages in a week. I mean, you know, we'd preach to them, and I mean, we'd have the Navigators and Leroy Amp and all these people. We don't have near as many sermons as we used to when we go to the Glen. Because this generation today processes truth differently. See, when I was in college, when I first heard the Navigators and I heard some Navigator speaking over here 100 miles, I'd take my notebook and drive over and listen to him take notes. Because I didn't know anything. I knew I didn't know anything. And I wanted to learn. Information was very important to me. Because the denomination, the group I grew up in, they didn't know anything much about follow-up. And I was very interested in learning that. Well, this generation today is not hungry for information. They grew up in the information age. Information's all around them. They're not hungry for information. They don't take notes necessarily the way my generation did. We were the notebook generation. We were always running to conferences, taking notes. These kids, they're not that way near as much. And the way they like to process truth, they don't want you lecturing to them that much. Now you get up and you tell them something, and then they want to get in a small group discussion and talk about it. And they process truth differently. See, before it was just, I mean, you just find somebody knows something, just get up and tell them. And they took it. You know, I did. I mean, if a guy said it, I believed it. Wrote it down. But this group, they want to hear what you say, and then they won't think about it. And they won't talk about it. And so, now, they want somebody to speak, and then they want to get in a small group discussion and talk about it, and they think about it. Just because you said it doesn't mean they're going to swallow it. Have you noticed that? Is that?
That's true.
Yeah. Okay. Now you notice, anytime you talk about a group, you have to generalize. So you might say, well, you know, I know somebody, and I don't think they're that as much that way, but these are at least general tendencies. Now, they want immediate gratification. They're used to getting what they want, and they want more fulfillment. Intimacy and pleasure, they're the great expectation generation. You know, when I was a kid, growing up, if there's a rich man in town and his kid had kind of a net under him. I mean, if he got in trouble with the police, his dad would get him out of it. If he wrecked his car, well, you know, his dad would fix it because he had money. And so wealth has always been kind of a safety net in people's mind. But it's interesting, the generation is growing up now like the college students. You want to get them in an uproar, just tell them tuition's going to grow up. And one of the reasons is because they're born in America and they have a sense of expectations. The rich have always had it. But now everybody has it. I'm born in America, you owe me a college degree. So don't be going up on a tuition too much or I'll get mad at you. You know, there's that kind of an attitude. Everybody today is born with a tremendous sense of expectancy. You owe it to me mentality.
Especially the government owes it to them.
That's right. The government owes it to them. See, I get on our students sometimes and say, listen, you know, you ought to study hard because you're getting loans and I'm helping pay for it and you don't need to be goofing off. But that's basically the mentality they have.
Max, did they get that from their parents then? If they're your students, they're the kids of the boomers?
I think they've gotten it from the whole culture, the whole society. I mean, you can start at the top down, just look at the president. You know, it's amazing to me if all of a sudden we have all this surplus, why don't we go ahead and pay off some debts? No, we're going to spend it some way, see? And there's a whole mentality that's grown up in the nation about debt and everything. I know students, $15,000, $20,000, they're not sweating. I mean, if a $35 concert is 100 miles from here tonight, they'll go. See, that blows my mind. I tell you, I'm riding along from Glen Eyrie with a student. He's a high school student. I say Glen Eyrie, we'd been up in Colorado. So I get him in my car, and he's planning 1 year from now to come to OU. So I say to him, you're planning to come to OU next year, right? He said, yeah. I said, do you have some savings for your college? He said, no. I said, do you have a savings account? Well, no. Do you have one penny saved for college? Well, no. And you're coming next year, and he's coming from out of state, so he's got to pay out of state tuition. I said, son, I'm going to try to give you a wake-up call. I said, you know, it costs money to go to college. And we began to talk about that. If you have to work a whole time and you're going to college, you're not going to have much of a ministry, and so you need some time and all this. So we began to talk about it. I said, you need to go and get a job. And he said, well, that cramps your style with your friends. I mean, I couldn't believe that cramps your style with your friends. Because you got a job, you know, and they want to go party. Well, so I talked pretty straight with him about that. And he said, well, there are not any jobs. And I said, now, wait a minute. Let's talk about that for a minute. Let's suppose your parents had to be gone somewhere. And so when you get home, let's suppose that they're gone. There's no food in the house. And they're going to be gone 6 months, and nobody's going to give you a penny. Now, when they come home, are they going to find you laying down on the floor, dried up, swiveled up, and you starved? And he said, well, no. And I said, well, why not? Now, remember, nobody's going to give you a penny. What would you do? And he said, I'd go get a job. I said, I thought you said there weren't any jobs. I said, would you go knock on somebody's door so you could rake leaves or something? Well, yeah, I guess I would. But see, that mentality just blows my mind. But now, incidentally, the new generation coming on, a lot of them are working. And we're finding this on the college campus today, a lot of them are working. They're having to work. Because especially the divorced homes, there's nothing worse on the finances than a divorce. And so a lot of them are coming and they are working. But there's a lot of that mentality too. They have almost no understanding of finances. And so, I mean, here you may be $20,000 in debt, but boy, if they come out with some new jeans down at Gadzooks, we'll go buy you some of them. You know? It's. But if you don't understand some of this mentality, you're just going to get upset with them, and you're not going to have a ministry. Because they're just going to see you as an old fogey. Okay? Now, they needed to be treated as individuals. See, I see this, and I try to get this over my staff. Like last year, we had 65 freshmen coming on Monday night to our meeting, and it cost them $335, but out of that 65, we took 60 of them to the Glen. Because we prayed for them, and we worked, and we visited every one of them every week. And I can go into a meeting on our campus, and we can have 200 students, and I can look around and tell you students that aren't there. They don't like to be seen. I'm just a part of the team. See, I mean, I need to know them individually, and that's why I go around first meetings and take pictures, and they don't know that, but I'm working late at night memorizing names. Because they need to be treated as individuals, not as just a group. And if you show individual, you know, interest in these people as individuals and pray for them, and see, one of the great things they need, these kids today grew up, they did not get at home what many people in generations past got. Mom was working also. A lot of times there's been the divorce and that type of thing, and they long for relationships. They really want relationships, and that's why, you know, when I was in college, and I don't say this to sound spiritual, but when I got interested in the things of the Lord, if I had a Friday night off, I might think about spending it in the Word. That will never, ever enter one of their minds. If they have a free Friday night, they're going to hang out with their friends. Now, it may not be that they're doing anything bad, not necessarily at all, but they long for relationships, and because they didn't have it with their families, you'll find them hanging out a lot together because their peers become kind of their family, and they love to be together. Okay, so they want relationships. Now, you notice here we've said that the builder generation said every time the door's open, I'll be there. They gave time and energy to the church. Now, the boomers see that very differently. The builders were denominationalists. You know, if you were a Baptist, you were a Baptist. But the boomers, if they're into music and it's better down the Methodist church, they'll go to the Methodist church. Later when they have kids, if they find that they've got a great nursery at the Presbyterian church, they may go down there. And then later, maybe they have a great youth program down at a Bible church, they may go to a Bible church. So it's interesting. There's not the sense of loyalty that ties people to you. They're looking more for reality. And the church is just a way station or stopover on their spiritual pilgrimage. In other words, it's not I am a member of this church. If that church serves me, fine, then I'll go. But that was the attitude. They dress informally. They view themselves as problem solvers. They don't minister out of a sense of duty as much. You know, there was a time with the builder, you need to ask him to do this or that. He would do it out of a sense of obligation. These people don't have near as much a sense of an obligation. If it doesn't fit their time, their abilities, their likings, they're not as likely to get involved in it. They're looking for identity. They want a church with clear-cut beliefs. Now, this is interesting. A lot of people would think, well, due to this, they don't want you telling it like it is. They don't want you really telling them exactly what the Word of God says. But that's not true. They do want that. When they come to church, they want you to tell them the truth. See? So they're not afraid of that. They want to know the truth. They're looking for identity. They want vitality and movement in a church. Singing, clapping hands, drama. They're looking for action. I mean, when you look at the movies today, I mean, it's just hilarious to see some of the movies and how much action there are and how they just barely get out before the thing blows up and all that. And you go back and look at some of the old movies and then look at the current movie, everything is very action-packed. Like when the first Rocky movie came out, y'all saw the Rocky movie. And when the second one came out, I read one time how many more licks they got in 20 seconds in this movie than they did the one before. You've got these kids, they've lived with action. You know, I mean, the movies and everything have to be so thrilling. And so they're looking for action. And then when they come to church and we sing an old hymn and somebody gets up and speaks for 45 minutes, that doesn't grab them. Now, don't misunderstand me. Fidelity was right. Infidelity was wrong. And we saw things, and if this is right, then the opposite of that is wrong. That's not true today. Because what you'll find with the generation ever since the boomers, you'll find it with the busters, you'll find it with this age, with the bridgers. They'll say, you may come and talk to a person about the Lord, and they'll say, oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad that really meets your need, and I'm real happy for you. But I don't really buy that. But we're both right. You believe that Jesus is the Son of God, and He is for you. But I don't believe He is. I'm Buddhist, and we're both right. You see, we've always, you're not both right. If Jesus is the Son of God and you don't believe that, you're in trouble. But they don't see that. For example, you can talk to a person, they say, oh yeah, I believe in the authority of the Scriptures. Yeah, that's right. The Bible is the authority. But I also believe in abortion. They don't see any contradiction to what God says about sanctity of life, the authority of the Scriptures, and then believing in abortion. And what you find on the college campus today, the biggest single word is tolerance. And don't be narrow-minded. You say Jesus is the only way. Well, that's fine for you. I'm glad you believe that, and I'm so glad you have peace. But that's not what I believe. And I'm right because this is right for me, and that's right for you. Okay?
That's not just college. It's
no.
At the very elementary level of our school, probably more than anywhere.
Right. And the whole thing is tolerance. And see, they try to make us look like, and you see this all the time in the culture, they try to make a Christian look like we're narrow-minded. But then when you get on a college campus, see, we're supposed to search for truth. But if I look for truth, and I really study, and I study biology and all this, and I come to the conclusion, looking at the evidence, I think something created us. Well, you can't talk about that. That's in the area of religion. And that's right. And see, that's basically what we have. And we're getting more and more of that in our culture, is that anything goes, and you've got to be tolerant.
Actually, tolerance is accepting all religions.
That's right. And see, let me tell you what's happening on the college campus. Take the gays, for example. There was a day when gay rights was basically, don't walk up and hit me in the nose because I'm a gay. You accept me. That's no longer the situation on the campus. Not only do you have to not walk up and hit him, but you have got to fully accept his lifestyle. Right. Because you can't, all values are equal, is what our culture is saying. All values are equal. So if you believe that, that's fine. But this other value over here is also equal.
Basically, there is no right or wrong.
There's no right or wrong. Fact is, this happened in a classroom in sociology. Somebody asked a question. Was what Hitler did wrong? This is a graduate course in sociology at a state university. Is what Hitler did was wrong? The professor could not get a single student to say it was wrong. What they would say, well, it would be wrong for me. See? And there's that sense, we're going to see this later, the moral certitudes in our country are fast being removed. Now, when I say all this, I want to stop right here and say this. You can say, well, man, this sounds awful pessimistic. No. We just need to walk into it with eyes open. We're still seeing students come to know Christ every week. We had a thing happen this week. One of our girls was over. This happened last Friday night. We go tonight. She's sitting over in the dining hall. She's got a book she's got to read for literature. She's sitting there and she said, I just wanted to get some time alone. And so she goes over and sits in the dining hall table. She's reading this. And a guy comes down and we've been talking about witnessing, trying to help. So this guy comes and sits down across from her and he says, what are you reading? She thought, I thought immediately God put him here. She said, well, I'm reading this novel about this young Russian fella, and he's trying to find out what life is all about, and I'm real interested to see what he came up with. And the guy said, well, I'd really be interested too. She said, you know, I'm really interested in reading this because I know what I've come up with. And so she began to share with him about the Lord. Well, a girl came up and sat down right beside her, and she thought, right next to the fella, and she thought, well, I'm going to continue to talk to him. So she just continued. Had a tremendous conversation with him. She even asked him, you think you're ready to make a commitment to the Lord? And he said, you know, I really want to think about it, and I appreciate what you've shared, but I don't think I'm ready yet. But maybe we could talk about it some more sometime. Well, then the girl sitting here, she turns to her and said, what about you? talked with her some more and said, would you like to have a personal relationship with Christ? And she said, yeah, I really would. I said, well, would you want to do it right now? And she said, I really would. And she said, I was sitting there trying to think, now do I go around and sit beside her? Or do I just say, let's bow our head? And she said, before she could do anything, the girl just looked up and said, Jesus, will you forgive me of my sin and come into my life right now? And she talked with her. She had tremendous assurance after she made that decision. She accepted the Lord right on the spot. She met with her the next day or so, had lunch with her, and was trying to follow up on her. Well, I'm not pessimistic, but I'm saying if you don't understand sometime when you're talking to a person, they can agree with you and agree with you, and you think, oh, I'm making tremendous progress. And they don't have the foggiest idea what you're talking about. You can ask, see, this generation is one of the most religious. The Bridgers are one of the most religious generations we've seen in many, many years. But religious, you don't have any idea what they mean by that. It may be a Star Wars kind of deal. So you talk with them and, oh man, you won't talk to them about religion? They're just so excited about it. But they have no idea that Jesus Christ, who He is, and that He's the only way and this type of thing.
Max, isn't some of this just a progression, deterioration of our really truth? I was just thinking as you were speaking, my dad's generation, my dad's 82. A man might have been immoral, marriage would never have broke.
Right.
That wife is going to stay with that man, and that man's going to stay. Now, they may have that immorality. The boomers came along and said, I'm not going to live this.
Right.
If I'm going to be immoral, I'm immoral, but I'm going to break up. And then the buster comes and says, I don't want a long-term relationship at all.
Right.
I want friends. I don't want this. And what I see it is this cause and effect. This ongoing, see, the pastor at one time was the authority. I've heard you talk about it in the country community. The most influential institution was the church.
Right.
But we've seen a deterioration of its influence now. Right. I know in the Denver metro area that a pastor is rated right there with a car salesman.
Right.
Credibility. As my generation questioned authority, questioned the honesty, the next generation says, I don't even want to ask that question. And this current student generation says, I don't even want to know the answers. Not their answers at any rate. I want to find my own.
Right.
It's a progression to me, as I just see it. We have disintegration of society.
Yeah. And I think there is a seeking for truth today, but they're not going to start at the same place. Not necessarily with Christ. Used to, if a person was seeking, that was about the only option they saw. But now they don't start. But I think that's exactly right. I think, okay?
Along those lines, too, at least from my viewpoint, it seems like, and maybe you can address this, that as we've seen this, if you will, deterioration and progression, and the morality goes down and the lack of absolutes, it seems like in the last 20, 25 years, there's been a tremendous counterculture spring up with like all the private Christian schools and the homeschooling and all this kind of stuff that goes directly against that and is trying to go back, if you will, to some of the absolutes and morality and some of these other things.
Right.
How does all that, would you fit all that in?
Well, and I believe that's exactly right. Because of that, and see, that's like, if I had a 6-year-old today, I think we'd homeschooling. Because I what you don't want to do is lose your kids. Now, a lot of people did lose their kids because they basically turned them over to the school or whatever. And whatever you do, I just say this, dude, don't lose your own kids, whatever it takes. I had a friend who's a medical doctor, and when his son was in the 7th grade, his daughter's in the 5th grade, they came home one time, they were smarting off to his wife and all that, and he said, I could see what was happening. He said, we yanked him out of school and started homeschooling him for a while because he said we realized we were losing our kids. I see the homeschooling movement, some of the Christian schools and some things are producing some terrific kids nowadays. Now, one of the things that we're going to help them to do is move back into the culture such that they're going to be witnesses and not just, isolationist. But I think when a kid's 6 is not when you're primarily interested in being an evangelist. You're interested in him getting the roots. And that's why I love to see them when they get college age to you know, to go to a state school, but tie in with a Christian group. I think one of the best places for them to be, if they can be tied in with a Christian group, but be where they're facing the world as it's going to be, is a great place for them. But I think up in sort of, okay, any other comment or? Yes.
I think the key to make that happen, I spent the bulk of my life being overseas, raising my kids overseas, bringing them back. And we look at different lenses in American culture. I'm a boomer with Buster kids, and they've gone to the state schools. But what I see is that parents who do not understand what you're trying to teach here have created a situation where it's impossible for their kids to ever integrate, because they've already created a siege mentality.
Right.
And so the kids can't relate to it because their minds have been poisoned.
Yeah.
And they no longer see it as a mission field. My daughter said to me one time, she said, "Dad, didn't you teach us that everything is going to fall apart until Jesus comes?" But we often live as if it's not going to fall apart.
Right.
And that isn't what the scriptures teach.
Yeah.
So then kids raised in that environment don't know how to minister. They don't know how to reach the lost of their generation.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's look at reaching boomers. There's a quote here. The fellow says we're going to have a great opportunity to reach them. Now, something interesting did happen with the boomers, especially as they began to have children. But many of them started, or some of them really started coming back to the church. Some of them, too, though, I read an article recently that a guy done some studies. Some of them stayed around for about 3 or 4 years and then left again. They came back, the church had a shot at them, and they felt like it just wasn't there. There wasn't the vitality. And guys, a lot of what you're getting at this whole conference is exactly what people need. If they can begin to get some help where they're coming to know the Lord, where it's more than just a Sunday morning attendance. Many people, I don't care what age, I've been on one campus for 31 years, we've never basically changed basically what we're doing. We have to, you know, we have to adjust the methodology some, but as far as trying to get people in love with Jesus Christ, getting into Word, memorizing, witnessing, growing, meeting with people, heart for missions, for the world, that hasn't changed. So you don't change the basic intent of what you're doing, but the way you go about that. See, it's like I'm finding it harder today. People don't just gravitate to Scripture memory as easily as they once did. Because discipline is pretty foreign to these kids' mentality. Now, we can get them memorizing verses, but I'm finding it's taking a little longer, and they sure have to see why. It's not just that somebody can tell them, "Hey, you ought to memorize this verse, it'll help you." See, there's a little more to it than that. Okay, let's flip on over some of the things that churches needs to be. Need to highlight purpose and vision, plan celebrative worship services. You know, I'd say one thing today on college campuses with groups that I know, the worship today is a whole lot better than it was many years ago. You know, like we have a little praise band, the students, we have an hour and a half meeting on Thursday night, they will sing for 30 minutes and love it. And I think when the guy gets up to speak, they're very, very open to it, because there's a much greater sense of worship today than there once was. Music is a big deal to them. See, when I was growing up, music wasn't a big deal to me. I mean, in a conference, you get up, somebody to lead a song just to get everybody quiet so somebody could preach. Well, it's not that way now. They like to worship, and that's an important part of the ministry. Okay, streamlined structure. Recruit them on the basis of their gifts, not just necessarily on the needs of the church. Give them multiple options. Small groups are important. Communicate visually. They're raised on TV. The screen, video, things like that, if you can use that some in your ministry, is probably wise. Expand women's roles. Now, I'm not talking about them being pastors and others, but we do need to use their abilities. It's interesting, the students too, like we see this, they're not going to give to a big mission organization as much as they're going to give to help an individual. See, when I was a kid, if I wanted to give to missions, I had to give to the cooperative program of the Baptist church where I went, because I'd never seen a live missionary. Well, now that's changing, and due to travel, people being able to go on mission trips, people are much more likely now to give to an individual or to give to help their buddy go overseas than they were, I think, many years ago, because they want personal involvement. This generation wants to get their hands dirty. They're very open to going down and helping in the soup kitchen or something like that. Far more so than the boomers or the builders and the seniors were. They like the idea of hands-on. And I will give to help you go on a mission trip. But that big mission board out there, I don't know about them. They're not as likely to give to that. They can be taught some to give. And many parachurch groups have found, and the church has even found, there's a lot of people will give 2 to even 10 years of some kind of mission work if they're really challenged. And here's some conclusions here. They're too big and too influential to be ignored. They're hunting and a midlife quest for meaning. There's a deep yearning for meaning and belonging. They're experience-oriented, future-oriented, growth-oriented, and action-oriented. Here's some books. Incidentally, this book, Great Expectations, by Lando Jones, that's a secular book, but it's the greatest book I've ever read about the baby boomers and helping you understand America. Okay, let's look at the busters for a few minutes. There's different age groups. Now, homogeneous, you know, America was once called a mix, you know, a melting pot. It's interesting, in America now, we don't talk about America as a melting pot anymore. We've got these very distinct groups. And it's interesting, in our day, there's more of an acceptance as far as races, and yet also more violence than we've ever seen. And one thing I deeply appreciate, I think Promise Keepers has done a great deal in this country to help with race relations. But it's interesting that you see this homogeneous genity is gone due to influx of immigrants, the different philosophies and lifestyles. We've already said this, that earning your loyalty never ends. Now, they're not as committed to building character. They lack the emotional stability and endurance to withstand the battle of the wills and values. That's a statement from George Barna. They can be helped to really build character, but that doesn't come easy for them. They're more interested in having their needs met than they are building deep character. They don't have a culture, music, fashions, or heroes of their own. Now, another thing, some of you may think, well, the older you get, the more you need to get out of ministering to these people. Exactly the opposite is true. You know, it was the boomers who said, don't trust anybody over 30. But this group, when it was asked who were their heroes, they don't have any. They don't know the difference between a sports figure and a hero anyway. But basically, one survey that was made, the one that got the most votes was Ronald Reagan, and he just got 8%. But they have a respect for older people. And I see this on the college campus today. It's easier for me to work with college students today than it was 10 years ago. Because they miss their parents, they miss their grandparents, their families are so messed up. One of the things they really long for, and it's been found with a lot of these busters and even the bridgers, if an older person will go to them and show an interest and want to meet with them, they will grub it up. They long for that. Our students, at one time we had at our church, we had just a college service with just college students. They don't want that. They want to be in church with all the people. They want to know older people. And so it's amazing the influence you could have on a person if you'll meet with them personally. Many of those people would be very, very open to that. There's no sense of ownership over their lives. I mean, they don't feel in control. They feel like the boomers messed it up. We don't know what's going to happen. You know, one of the reasons you're seeing the body piercing, you know, that's gross to most of us probably. I mean, you know, they're piercing their ears and their nose and their tongue and other parts that you don't see. One of the reasons they do that is they feel like the one thing I can control is my own body. And see, we look at that and say, that's the dumbest thing. But with them, it's a sense of, I can't control where I'll have Social Security when I get old. I can't control where I'll have a job. There's a lot of things I can't control, but one thing I can do, I can put this thing through my tongue and nobody's going to tell me I can't. And so that's part of the reason.
Is that the tattoo fetish? Right.
That even carries over into a lot of TV shows.
Yeah. And with the busters, leisure is no longer a privilege, it's a right. You know, used to, I know when I was in college, you studied hard and then you went out and did something. Don't try to sell them that. If something's going on, they're going to go. If they don't get studied, they'll study later. But there's not that sense of work hard and then reward myself. It's going to be, I'll reward myself all through. If I get it done, fine. If I don't, I'll probably still exist. They're not going to flunk all of us out or whatever. Now, in some ways, the boomers and the busters are the same. In other ways, they're different. They're people of no boundaries. You know, they've grown up with technology. There's no moral boundaries to a large degree. You know, they grow up with Pentium chips, emails, all of this stuff. You know, if I wanted to know something about Japan, I'd go get an encyclopedia and look it up. They won't. I mean, if they want to know what's it like living in Osaka, Japan, they'll get on an email and talk to some kid in Japan. I mean, as a result of computers and that age, the way they go about getting information, the way they look at things is totally different than we would, you know, many, many years ago. They are so comfortable with growing up with computers and email and World Wide Web and all that. And of course, that's a real problem too, because now pornography and all that is so accessible to them. You know, when we even started with videos, that you could go to a video store where kids could get a hold of R-rated and all kinds of stuff like that. But now with the web and all of that, unless they come to some convictions, our culture is set up to destroy people. There's a habit of moral relativity. One survey said 70% say there's no absolute truth. All truth is relative. The role of TV, they've watched 20,000 hours. By the time they're 20, they've seen 30,000 over. Murders, they've been overexposed to harsh realities, underexposed to moral absolutes. Now, look down at the next one. No organizational loyalty, we've talked about that. But you know what an absolute is? It's something that's true for all people in all places in all times. And a lot of these people say, well, I don't believe in moral absolutes. Well, let me ask you this. Do you believe in any culture in the world it's okay for a man to rape a 7-year-old girl? Is that okay in any culture? No. Well, then that's an absolute. And one of the things I would say to all of you, if you can get a hold of Josh McDowell's book, Right from Wrong, you ought to read it. In the film series that he's done, we showed it in our church, it's absolutely excellent. To read that, Right from Wrong. It's very good. And if you have young people in your church, you ought to take them through that series, Right from Wrong. It's very, very good. And Joshua will really help you at this point. Because many of these people that say they don't believe in absolutes, they do believe in absolutes. Is it okay in any culture just to murder somebody because he has blue eyes and you don't like blue eyes? Well, no. Well, then that's an absolute.
But we don't have a problem with a 48-year-old married man having sex with a 21-year-old girl.
Yeah. You know what? We have got a baby boomer president. And if you just understand that, you understand a lot about where he's coming from.
Let's ask him if it's absolutely okay to be
intolerant. Now, notice another thing. They do believe in the importance of the family. You talk to kids nowadays, and that's one thing they really want. Now, through one survey on a college campus, they would ask, how many of you someday want to be happily married? 97% want to be happily married. But you ask them, how many of you think your marriage will make it? And over 75% of them say, I don't think my marriage will make it. Because they've seen so much divorce. And you'll find a lot of them today, one lady wrote a book, I recommended it here, called The Postponed Generation. You know, 75 years ago in America, a kid graduated from high school, get married, go to work, make a living, live out his life. That's just what people did. A kid probably 75 years ago had more maturity when he was 18 than a 28-year-old does today in America. Because now they'll go to school and they'll move back in with mom and, you know, they go back to graduate school a while. It's hard for them to figure out what to do. You know, when my dad grew up, he could be a carpenter because he could buy a hammer, but he didn't have the money to buy a farm. His dad wasn't a farmer. There weren't all that many options. But today, there's tremendous options. And these kids, they don't know what they want to do. A lot of them will arrive on the campus never having worked a week in their whole life. And that's one thing I hated to see about the American farm go under. It's a great place to raise kids. But now raising a kid in the city, what can he do when he's six? Make up his bed. You know, and he grows up, he can take out the trash and feed the dog, but who wants to hire him when he's nine? Nobody. Because we got all kinds of rules, you know, where companies can hire, so a lot of the kids growing up, they don't learn to work. They don't have any sense of what they want to do, so they arrive on the campus. And they study this for a while, and then this looks okay, and then this looks okay. And so, be understanding of that. It takes people some time. And sometimes a lot of kids, I was speaking up at last weekend to a group of about 160 students from Colorado up at the YMCA camp up at Estes Park from the BSUs. I walk in a restaurant in Denver and a kid comes up that I know, been in BSU. Well, what's he been doing? Well, he went 2 years up to Aspen and kind of lounged around there, and now he's back in Denver and he's just working at Chili's. And so a lot of them you'll find, they're not anxious to get on with a career. They'll work here a while and then go somewhere here a while. And see, we can see it as you need to grow up. Well, yeah, he does. But it's going to take him some years to do that. Okay, some of these books here would be good if you're interested in pursuing that further. Look on page 5. Wait a minute, we just looked at page 5, didn't we? Look on page 6. Here's some ways to reach busters. Up-to-date worship service. Challenge in the short-term ministry. Thanks. There are a lot of things there you can read. Notice down about number 6. Eliminate churchy-sounding words, especially if you're working with church, things like foyer, vestibule, sanctuary. Use words like platform, auditorium, lobby, things that they understand. They're kind of already, many of them are afraid of church anyway. so you can look down through there. Here are some suggestions for blending the three generations. And boy, this is hard in a church. I mean, it is tough in a church today when you've got, and this is just talking about the three generations, the builders, the boomers and the busters, and hadn't even gotten to the bridgers. That is so hard when you have three different groups, because the old folks, they want the hymns, you know, they don't care for the guitar, this type of thing. Even their view of the auditorium, this is holy. Well, they want to protect the church, don't spill anything on the carpet. See? Well, the busters and the bridgers, they just like to bring coffee into the auditorium to sit there and sip while you're preaching. See? There's that different. One group wants to use the church, the other wants to protect the church. Well, that's hard in the music style. And sometimes when a pastor tries to do a little bit of all of it, then everybody hates him. I mean, you know, a music director today, if there's anything in the earth I'd want to be, that wouldn't be it. Because especially if you're in Oklahoma or Texas or, you know, around an area where we live, where a church has been there 100 years, boy, you got problems. I mean, it's tough. Because you got all three of these groups in here. Some like the old hymns. Some would rather have the clapping and you know, have it on the screen, the words. And so that's hard. So blending those is tough. One thing you need to get the support of lay people, in trying to minister to these three groups, you're going to help them see the opportunities and the needs. And here are just some different things that you can do. Foster common ground experiences. And so it's tough blending those three generations in a church. A lot of you in your ministries, where you're with a parachurch group or Bible study, you can more focus on one group. But that's one thing that will help you to keep from being too critical of the church, because it is tough. You know, I've been in a church where for several years we've tried to turn it. And after you wipe the blood out of your eyes a few times, you see that's hard. It's tough. There's conflict over, on page 7, there's conflict over worship styles, the form. You know, some of the old people want to hear the gospel. It's real interesting. I talked to some of the older people, and boy, that preacher just needs to preach the gospel. Now, they've been saved for 40 years, but they want to hear one more sermon on the gospel. Well, they like vertical sermons, just, you know, preach the gospel. Well, a lot of the boomers and people want sermons about how do you get along with your boss, or how do you get along with your wife, or help me with my kids. They like practical sermons. They're not as interested in the expository sermons. See, that will shock some of you. You know, they're not interested in you just going through Hebrews and taking 3 years to do it, expounding every word that you might enjoy knowing what that word means, but they won't know how to help me with this stress I'm feeling and help me with this and that. They like practical sermons. Disagreement over Bible translations, you know. Some of them like the old King James, and, you know, the new kids, they don't. Different views of the church. We've already talked a little bit about that. Misunderstood priorities. As I said, the builders, they'll give to foreign missions. The boomers and busters, they want to help close to home, or they want hands-on type stuff. Now, they'll do missions, but as I said, it's more of a personal thing with them. This is interesting. You get a 70-year-old goes in the hospital, and if a pastor doesn't visit him, boy, well, when so-and-so's in the hospital, you visited him. Well, some of these younger ones, they may not care whether the pastor visits them all, as long as their friends do. So there's a whole different view. See, that I like the latter concept better, because if they have a Sunday school class, like, for example, we had one lady in our church. She had an operation of Sunday school class. Different ones were bringing over meals. She doesn't care where the pastor... And she said that. I don't care where he comes to me or not. I mean, fact is, I kind of hope he doesn't. But I like my friends coming, see. But the older people... Everybody in church could come if the pastor didn't. Well, the pastor didn't visit. He didn't visit me when I had my operation. A whole different attitude. There's a disunity oftentimes in a church over the use of drama, video, contention over programs. Now, there's different models. You can have a blended model. That's where you have all these different groups. You can have a seeker model. That's where... You hear about Bill Hybels' church up in Chicago, where they really pitch the Sunday morning service to non-Christians. The Christians meet on Thursday night. They try to have that service to make the non-Christian feel comfortable. And then there's others where you have a multiple track.
track model,
different things going on. You may have in the basement a Korean church meeting and American church meeting here and all this different kinds of things. Satellite models, like Tom Eliff at First Southern. He preaches there and then he goes over to a hotel and preaches at another location. They're starting a satellite there. And then the rebirth model, that's where you try to take something that's dead and make it alive or change it. That's a little bit tough, too. Here's another book, just a secular book, but it's worth reading.
As far as between the boomers and the dusters, procreation, how many children ratios, is there any difference in children?
Somebody else might could answer that better than I. I'm not sure. I know that right now there's a suspicion of marriage on the part of some of them, of waiting. I know the Bridgers and these and the Busters really want to have children, but they want to wait. So I don't know if there's any difference as far as the number of children they will have. You know, here's a long quote on page 8. And I want us to read that. By the way, I have one paralyzed vocal cord, so sometimes my voice gets kind of weak. But look at this, and let me just read it, because there's some real content here that I think is a tremendous summary. Now, it's in the book on the Bridgers, and he'll draw this to where the Bridgers are. But I want you to see what he says about the boomers. He said, "I'm sickened by the mark we the boomers have left on the nation. We demanded our rights, and now we have a nation that focuses inward. Not a day goes by that we do not hear yet another news story about some person or group demanding their rights. The stories of altruism and sacrifice become fewer and farther between. Man was the generation that insisted on free love. Free love and individual rights often meant extramarital sex, unfaithful relationships. Our legacy has thus been an explosive growth in the divorce rate. Free love often meant intercourse without regard to consequences. So we left a legacy of AIDS, abortion, and abandoned families. Free love meant a new, more enlightened morality. So we gave the nation its most immoral influence ever. What a terrible legacy we've left. The boomer generation wanted to have it all, to go for all the gusto we could get. The advertisements of our day reflected our values, and we did. But present pleasures often come at the expense of future pain. We left a legacy of families, one paycheck away from bankruptcy, or families with no savings. We gave America an economy ill-prepared for the 21st century. Soon our nation will not have sufficient funds to pay for Social Security and Medicare. I am among the 76 million strong generation that set a new course for the narrow-minded morality and truth of the Bible and the Ten Commandments. We set ourselves above truth, and in essence, we became our own gods. But our rise to deity has brought chaos and confusion. We now have no set standards. As in the days of Israel's judges, everyone does what is right in his own eyes. And everyone has different ideas of right and wrong. Moral confusion is the norm. We no longer hold our leaders to high standards of character because we ourselves really have no idea how to define strong character. When I was a child and teenager in the 60s, I had no idea upon what course our nation was headed. We have left the Bridger generation a frightening legacy." You've seen a great example of this in the last few days as people have responded to the Clinton accusations. People say, many people interviewed, you see how his rating has gone up. I don't care what he does, that's personal with him. You know, they certainly hadn't memorized Luke 16:10. He is faithful, that which is least is faithful also in much. No idea of that at all. That's his personal life. I'm not here to say what he's done or what he hasn't. I'm just saying, hasn't it been interesting to see the way the nation has responded to that? Yes.
One thing I'm wondering about is we've mentioned this divorce rate and breakdown of family. I'm wondering just what kind of impact is coming about because of that. I mean, insecurity, emotional pain, immaturity. You know, we mentioned that. One thing I've run into, I don't know if there are any Greek pastors here, but sometimes kids have experienced more in their 5 years than I have experienced up in my 40. They have seen more pain or violence.
That's right.
You know, they've had to mature in one sense faster than I did before I got my 30.
Well, and see, one of the things I'm saying to you guys, and I think you need to hear this, I think in the future we're going to be better, need to be better prepared to minister than we were in the past. For example, when I came to OU, you could give a kid a little bit of vision, take him to a conference or two, give him a little bit of help, and he's off to the races. But we have kids now, like many years ago, I was in the dorm one night, and I was talking to a guy, and he said, "I'm an atheist." I said, "You're a junior, aren't you?" He said, "Yeah, how'd you know?" And I said, "Well, you have to be here at least 2 years before you're this messed up." And that was true many years ago. But we have kids now coming as freshmen, hard, bitter. I run into freshmen that claim to be atheists. There are kids that have had more hard knocks in life by the time they're 18, a lot of them, than many people experience in a lifetime. There's a... when you think, they tell us now that over in the sorority and fraternity, one out of every four girls has a problem with anorexia. When I came to OU, I didn't know a homosexual. You know, I mean, I guess they were there, but I'd never met any. But I know here even 10 years ago when we had our first freshman meeting, we knew of four that were coming. Now, a lot of them won't stay around once they see where we're going. But... you wouldn't believe the problems that some of these kids are arriving with. The hurt, they've been sexually molested or this or that. And that's why it's hard to be down on them. You know, if I had gone through what they'd gone through, I'm not sure I would have come out any better than they did. But two, the grace of God is adequate for them. And we're seeing that. We're kids that... But we keep a fellow on our staff now, and he's here with us. It's kind of trained in biblical counseling because they're kids... I think they're probably kids that 20 years ago, I would have said, "Oh, this kid just doesn't mean business." And I would have not spent time with him. And that would have been the way I would have described it. But I remember we had a discipleship group, and one of the girls... was telling me this particular girl in the group, you couldn't slow it down enough for her to keep up. I mean, discipline was totally foreign to her. She wouldn't get her verses memorized. She was a very beautiful young lady. One day I was talking to her, I said, "Can I ask you a question?" I said, "Tell me about your relationship to your dad." And she just broke down and started boo-hooing. He'd been sleeping with her ever since she was 9 years old. Now see, now you get her in her discipleship group and you wonder why.